Alright, so the dock is finally back in. I know I'm a little raggedy with it, but life, it's been lifing, but okay. Before we get into all the craziness with the Sexual Healing Podcast, I want to remind all of you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Share this episode with a friend. I believe today's topic is relevant to a lot of folks out there. You know, if you feel so inclined to live tweet or comment, please do so. Use the hashtag SexualHealingPod. I'd greatly appreciate it. And last but certainly not least, I am looking for 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. And if you feel inspired again, write a review. But at the very least, visit Apple Podcasts, even though it's a hot mess, and just give me, you know, a little click in that 5-star range, all right? Okay, so as I said, this is a Sexual Healing Podcast, and this is Dr. Pookie. And on this show, I talk about life, really, from the perspective, or from my perspective, as a black, same-gender-loving man in my 40s, living in, at the present, rainy Southern California. Had not planned to record a podcast episode today, but something went down and I got that feeling, so a brother is back. So what have I been up to during my absence? I know I was supposed to return in mid-October. I very optimistically, maybe over-optimistically, thought I'd be feeling better than I actually was. I was hoping to return to the show 100% healthy, with good energy levels and very little equilibrium issues that have been plaguing me all year since the infection. But, I still wake up dizzy about 4 or 5 days out of the week to varying degrees. And I just was like, I want to give the show my all. I have some things that I want to do that are going to require me to leave my desk. And it's really difficult to do that when you still feel like you're going to pass out at various points during the day. So other than healing from the major health scare earlier this year and resting, I've been starting to get some exercise again with some walking and enjoying my family and friends. Just sitting down, chilling out on occasion, and just having a good time and appreciating them for who they are. And I've been working when I can get it in. I don't have a huge client load right now, so I kind of do stuff as it emerges. I'm not really teaching right now, but perhaps I will be in the new year. That's what I've been told. And last but not least, I've been writing. I am still working on getting a couple of projects out there. The National Novel Writing Month event for 2019 just concluded a week ago, and I am happy to report that somehow I wrote 50,000 words, 51,060, I believe, this month or last month. So I was able to eclipse the 50,000 word mark. I can't say that there's a complete novel in there. There's material. There are parts of multiple projects in there in that that long soliloquy that's going on there. But hopefully I will be out by the new year with something. I'm really excited to get the first piece of writing out there. And I believe the first item or two will likely be free. So we'll see. Also during the interim, I have been working on the show. I wanted to give it a makeover so we could come back all brand new like a new bitch and shit. And I have not achieved that goal just yet. However, I am renaming the show to Sexual Healing with Dr. Pookie. And I'll be focusing the show around three areas, which are still relatively broad. It's self-love, right relationship, and of course, sensational sex are going to be the three areas. And anything that falls within that triangle of topics, we're going to get into. I have, about 15 interview topics and people that I've kind of matched up, and some of them have said, oh yeah, I'll do it. Others I still have to reach out to, but it will not be just me talking every episode. I'm excited about that. So hopefully that will be debuting soon, but I believe I'm going to get back in the habit of reporting or recording something every week. This week, I kind of want to talk about some shit that went down today. So short story time here. So I leave my Buddhist study group at my church, and I head over to McDonald's for lunch. Please don't judge me. I know it's toxic and bad for me, but it's quick. And also the nutritionist at the hospital told me I could have a happy meal. So that's what I got. And I'm walking out of the place after eating my little food, and I hear some guy holler, "Ooh, you a bald-headed hoochie." And I was like, huh? I kind of turn around like, say what now? And he was like, "I'ma cream them cakes for you." Now, I just did not anticipate this level of foolishness coming from another man at a McDonald's during lunch hour in a very busy shopping area. Yet, that is what happened. I was basically what we call street harassed. It was a lot. I mean, initially I was kind of appalled when I realized he was talking to me, because I kind of looked around. There was no one else out walking in the parking lot. So he was clearly talking to me. And then I went from kind of appalled as I got back in my car, because I basically was like, I'm not going to engage this fool in conversation. It's just absurd. I'm not doing this. And even though I was heading to therapy after I had my lunch, but I had some other shit I once talked to my therapist about, not this fool and his madness that he was trying to introduce into my world. But I was appalled initially. And then I kind of chuckled because I said, okay, I will give you your creativity for creaming my cakes. And also, I've never been called a bald-headed hoochie before, but okay. That's what he saw. I can't change his opinion, because I was in some jeans and a coach's shirt. And yeah, it was a crew shirt. So I don't know where he got the bald-headed hoochie. It wasn't like I had my ass hanging out. But again, whether you're harassed or not is really not a function of what you're wearing. It's just about what people decide they're going to do and what type of power and influence they're going to exert over your person, whether it be your body or your mind or just, yeah, your whole being. So it was interesting because, of course, I was appalled. And then I kind of chuckled. And then I was kind of like, oh, okay, I still got it. You know, so I still got something. And you know, it wasn't like the man was unattractive. But I was still like, I was like, he ain't worth a damn. Can't be worth a damn. You know, because there were better ways to get my attention other than calling me a bald-headed hoochie. I don't know where that was supposed to go over well. Then I became a little disturbed. Because I was like, okay, I still got it, you know. And I said, that is not the time. That is not, you know, the thing you're supposed to be like, yeah, and haven't taken some pride from. But, you know, a brother still got something. I'm still calling somebody to the yard with my shake. And then finally, after I thought about it, I didn't talk to my therapist about it, because I was like, I had other stuff, like I said, that I really wanted to discuss with him. And it was a good session. He did not snatch my wig. He's been snatching my wig a lot this summer. it's just like I've been snatched bald more often than not. I would say 85% of the time he'd been snatching my wig off in sessions. But today was very, you know, it was very collaborative, and it was nice. And, you know, I didn't want to come across the room on him at all today. I was pleasantly surprised. Usually he does kind of make me want to come for him, but I guess he's doing his job. But it was a good session, and, you know, and then I felt kind of, when I got back in the car coming back home and it's raining, and I was just kind of compelled to speak out, because I guess a week ago, I had stopped at the gas station because my tire had like a leak in it, and I had filled up that hole twice in one day. So I believe the first time, yeah, that was the first time I put some air in it. I stopped at a gas station over by the university, and there was this young lady, like a bus came and let some people off, and there was a young lady walking across the parking lot at this gas station, which is just kind of, it's a weird little setup. They got like the car wash behind it and the gas station, and has a retaining wall around the whole thing, and it's attractive, but it's also kind of odd. And there were these guys in a large truck. I think it was maybe like a tree trimming truck, but it was a massive truck. One of the guys was basically hanging out of the passenger seat, kissing, you know, doing the kissing sounds at this woman. And I was like, what is that? Like, I'm trying to get air in my tire and not fall over, you know, from being bent over and all that, because, you know, that tends to get the, if not the tinnitus going, it will certainly get my head to spinning a bit to bend over for more than a couple of seconds. So I was trying to just get through that and stand up slowly and not fall out, and, you know, in the middle of the parking lot and just look foolish. And so this young lady, she basically was ignoring him. And then there was a third guy. Well, there was a guy driving, the one in the passenger seat, and there was a third one. He, like, opened this little window. It was a wood window, though, that kind of flipped open on the side of the shell of this thing. And it was, I would say this truck was a good 10 feet off, you know, 10 feet high. And he comes out like, hey, baby, mamacita. And I'm just looking like, she don't want y'all. This young lady is getting off the bus, trying to get to her class. Why are y'all fucking with her? And it was just, you know, it was just ridiculous. And I kind of, as she walked by me, I said to her, I was like, hey, are you all right? And she's like, I'm cool. I said, you know, if you want to ride to campus, although I guess I looked really pervy at the time, now to think about it. And I said, and, you know, and I was like, oh, never mind. They're obviously going to be driving on, so you shouldn't have too much trouble getting to campus. Because she was about a very long block from campus. Those of you in Long Beach probably know where I'm talking about. And, you know, she's right, we're right across the street from the VA hospital. And she's like, oh, no, I'm good. And I said, okay. I was like, well, I hate that they, and they actually, they're still there doing their shit, but because I'm talking with her, you know, I just have my back to them. And they actually, the guy in the front seat, because I recognize his voice, you know, he told me to get up off his bitch. And I said, oh my God, this is ridiculous. And she said, I'm used to it. And I said, well, that may be the case, but you shouldn't be used to something like this. This is just unacceptable. And so it got me to thinking about my previous experiences with street harassment, and also just straight up sexual assault, frankly, attempted sexual assault. You know, there have been times, you know, if you go up to West Hollywood or WeHo, as they call it, there are tons of bars and there are gay men galore walking the streets, some of them sober, some of them drunk. And there's one particular bar that is next to a business and also up the street from my friend's former residence. So I used to walk by there a lot. And every time I did, whether it was through the alley behind the place, which was a very well-lit alley, and they turned it into a parking lot, so it wasn't all seedy. I think they used to call that alley Vaseline Alley, so you can imagine what was going on back there. And I respect the hoes. Go do your thing, you know. And actually, not even hoes. I use hoes as almost like a pronoun. So I respect the hustle as well as, you know, the public sex, as long as you are not exposing yourself to people that are not trying to see that, particularly children. That's just unacceptable. So I've walked in front of this place. It's called the Gold Coast. What did this girl do to my massager? My niece didn't kill my massager. Oh, no, she didn't. I'm using it the wrong way. All right, there we go. This place is called the Gold Coast. I think it has a new name now. I haven't been up to WeHo in over a year. Certainly out of a car and able to walk around and see something. It's been some time. But every time I walk by the Gold Coast, somebody catcalled me. Somebody just said something inappropriate. And it just was what it was. And I kind of understood how the young lady felt when she said she just got used to it. Because it is, if you're out there, particularly just out there, period. Particularly if you're in a space that is somehow sexualized or it is associated with folks cruising and just having expectations of sexual access, it's going to be a little grimy. So I've been called all sorts of things and had all sorts of invitations and overtures sent out to me outside the Gold Coast, which is interesting because it's the only place in West Hollywood where I apparently am seen by men, because no one else is remotely intrigued by what I'm offering. And so I'm like, okay. So, I mean, in one regard, I could say I was a touch flattered, but it was, you know, if you were just like, hey, let me buy you a drink, that's flattering. If you're like, you can imagine some of the things being said, you know, just, yeah, let me, you know, let me tear that ass up. Let me suck that big black cock, you name it, just all the bullshit. I've heard all of it, I think, except today was new. The Ball-Headed Hoochie was definitely a new entry into the catalog, I have to say. And I might have to use Ball-Headed Hoochie my damn self, because actually that was funny as hell to me. But getting back to the story, there have been, you know, I've gone to the Eagle in D.C. And did I make it to the New York Eagle? I cannot remember. But I went to some bar in Chicago as well. And just got groped just ridiculously. You know, that's to be expected at the Eagle. You know, especially if it's crowded and you pretty much have to bump up against people to get through a room, you're going to get groped. I was just happy that my jeans were still on and my wallet was still in my pocket. So that's all I could ask for in that situation. I think I've shared an attempted sexual assault that I survived. I was at a party and this drunk gentleman decided he was going to basically kind of, you know, I'm lying on the grass in the backyard just trying to chill out from the party because it was a Friday night and I tend not to do a lot on Friday because I'm just kind of fried. Because back then I actually had a 9-to-5 and, well, really an 8-to-5, and it had been one hell of a week. And so I went to a party because there was going to be liquor, and it was a lot cheaper to drink theirs than to go spend $10-$15 for a cocktail, and I was going to need at least 3. So I went to the party. It was a nice party, but I just needed some downtime. The introvert in me was screaming, and went outside, was lying in the grass, just kind of looking up at the stars, having a nice evening, and this guy comes out, you know, attractive older gentleman. Under different circumstances, you know, we definitely could have chatted, and it would have been a very different experience. But he basically, I guess his drunkenness made him a little bolder than usual, and he felt like I was playing hard to get, so he kind of rolled over on top of me at one point and was kind of grinding me, and I had to go in and check that chin and bust that nose and for his trouble, which I never want to hit anyone. However, you were trying to take my goodies, so I just, yeah, that was a violation. He has since apologized, but it was what it was. It was a sexual assault. It was an attempted sexual assault. And I would say I was assaulted because, you know, he did perform some sexualized violent acts upon my body. You know, he certainly held me down as best he could. And because I would say we're about the same size. He was a little wider than me, though. Yeah, but his body weight kind of held me down until I could finally kind of get an angle to really push him off. And I couldn't really get that until I punched him in the face, you know, but hey. So, yeah, that was a situation. And then there was an incident at one of the popular spots in West Hollywood called Mickey's, where this guy, I call him the dick grabber, he just kind of walked up to me and grabbed my crotch and said, "I want some of that big black cock." And I said to him, I was like, "You got 2 seconds to let go of me." And he was like, you know, he did let go, and he was like, "Oh, testy, you know, you should feel honored that I want to be bothered with you at all." And I said, "Bitch, walk away. Just walk away. Your whiteness is not scoring you any points here. It's just not. It's not." So I think that was just certainly an example of, you know, somebody feeling entitled to my body in some way and me having the agency to say, "No, you're not getting it." So all those experiences kind of came back to me while I was driving to my therapist's office this afternoon. And I said, "You know, I'm not going to talk to my therapist about this, but I am going to report a podcast. I keep saying record a podcast. Goodness. I'm out of shape. My chops are a little wispy at the moment, but I'm going to get it together." Okay. Actually, I'm going to take a quick pause. I need some water. I'll be right back, y'all. Okay, so I'm about to get through this episode with a swig of water. It's so sad. Need to change the bottle in the cooler, and I don't have it to give right now. That's a little too much bending and stretching and all that. I'm going to have to take a nap after that. So, back to the issue at hand, street harassment. I wanted to part therapeutic for me, obviously, just by virtue of talking about my experiences in this arena, there's going to be some sort of therapeutic benefit. But I think also I wanted to share something that may benefit someone else. So I did a little quick research on street harassment, particularly how it impacts LGBTQ folk. Most of the focus on this episode will be on how it impacts men, at least in the statistics that I'm about to share and some of the studies that I came across. But it does involve people in general. So there is an organization called Stop Street Harassment, and that's at stopstreetharassment.org. And they've commissioned a couple of studies in the last, I'd say, 10 years. One was in 2014, where they had a sample of 2,000 people in the U.S. I suspect that it was probably a random sample, given that they hired a consulting firm to do this work for them. So of those 2,000 people, 65% of all the women in the sample had experienced some street harassment, which is just, it's ridiculous. You're talking about damn near 2 out of every 3 women. So if you were at Thanksgiving, for example, and you sitting there with your grandmama, your mama, and maybe her 2 sisters, and maybe 2 of your female cousins, 4 of them have probably had someone say some bullshit to them on the street. And the thing that's most interesting about that is that unless someone has asked them about it, they don't even talk about it in a lot of cases. So this, just like sexual assault, just like rape, attempted rapes, you name it, are still underreported. Because a lot of people, or at least certainly at one point in time, they were like, "Well, he didn't touch you. What's the problem? It's not like you were raped. So why are you coming to us about this?" And so as society has become a bit more evolved and has really gotten more in tune with the issues that are impacting women out there and how they've been treated unfairly and in some cases silenced for the benefit of men and their libidos, we are seeing that this idea of street harassment is less and less socially acceptable. And there's also a rising number of folks, particularly other men, that are being trained to be intervening bystanders when this stuff happens. And by bystanders, they're just folks that are around. It's very much if you see something, say something kind of thing, like you get in the subways and all that, and at the airport. It's the same concept. But back to this study, I'm going to get to the bystander thing a little later. So also in this same study, they sampled men as well, and 25% of the men in the study reported being street harassed. And 9% of the whole sample that included men, the most common was homophobic or transphobic slurs being sent their way. So this isn't all just some horny guy whistling at another guy that he finds attractive. This is also just regular guys out there, so to speak. I put the quotes around regular, that are basically yelling out homophobic and transphobic slurs at men that they do not know. And they can't necessarily be sure that these men are, in fact, gay. Now, obviously, if someone is trans and they're not passing, they don't have passing privilege, okay. But I think even then, obviously, you still keep your damn mouth shut. But there's certainly like, okay, well, sister, you know, what can we do to make sure you feel safe out there on the street? Because it's our trans siblings are going through some shit that we can't even fathom a lot of the time. It's stuff that we just don't think about, that we take for granted. Okay, but I want to stay on topic. So Stop Sexual Harassment commissioned another study, basically using the same general methodology of 2,000 folks, and they did this in 2018. And these numbers were even more, I would say, interesting. So 81% of the women reported some form of sexual harassment and or assault in their lifetime. 81%. Now that includes catcalls, that includes a guy grabbing a breast or a butt cheek, that includes men sexually, or not just men, but someone being sexually harassed in the workplace. This could be verbal comments. All those things fall under this umbrella of sexual harassment, okay? And also assault when it gets physical. Okay, I hear my neighbors are cutting up. Hopefully they clear the courtyard soon. Okay, so now of those women, 81% of them, 77% said that the harassment was verbal. So keep in mind, it was 65% back in the 2014 study. Now it's 81%. And they're breaking it down even further. 51% reported being touched or groped. Just process that number. 51%. You're talking about, if the sample is an even split of 1,000 male-identified and 1,000 female-identified persons, you're talking about 510 of those female-identified persons said somebody touched or has groped me during my lifetime. That are you kidding? But that's what we're dealing with. And the fact that 81% of women, period, said this. 27% of the women in the sample reported being sexually assaulted. So that, again, is pretty consistent with the numbers that we have of 1 in 4 women being sexually assaulted in her lifetime. That's too high. So again, if you're sitting there at the table with grandma and mama and 2 of your aunties and 2 of your cousins, and then, you know, your sister comes in and she has her best friend with her, 2 of those women in the room, statistically speaking, are probably have or will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. And don't think that because grandma hasn't been sexually assaulted that she won't be, because she's older. It's not a sexual crime in that sense. you do have stalkers that, you know, that will report some degree of sexual attraction or obsession with their prey. We'll call it that because it's a hunt, and it's just. I'm not going to get into all that, but there are women into their 80s that have been sexually assaulted. So it's not this thing of, oh, I'm aging out of it. No, you don't age out of it. If you're breathing, it's a possibility. And gentlemen, I think this thing of us not understanding what the average woman goes through in a day. I believe there was a study. I gotta find that thing. But there was 78 or 87 specific acts that the average woman does in a day to avoid being raped or sexually assaulted. Can you imagine that many things, looking over your shoulder that much throughout a day, having your behavior regulated that closely and monitored? You can't just go about your day and go about your business. Oh no. You have to be hypervigilant and make sure that some asshole is not waiting around a corner for you or is not hiding behind your car when you go to get it in the morning. Or, you know, my mother even said to me, I don't want to use our garage because I have to pull in at night and it's dark and our garage backs into the alley. And so she doesn't want to use the garage because if at night she has to pull in, she's kind of stuck there if someone walks in behind her. It's just, it's crazy that we can't use our shit. That she cannot use her shit. And I mean, even for me, I'm not up to 100%. So I'm even more susceptible than I would be at 100%. I mean, if someone decided to blitz attack, who's to say I could defend myself against that? I'm getting out of the car with my back turned. I'm in a dark space. It's very confined. I have no room to maneuver. This person has momentum built up. They can take me out pretty quick before I can even turn around and see them. So that's the reality. Now, I'm probably going to use our garage once we get everything out of there. But I'm going to be a little leery. I'm going to probably get the garage door opener repaired before I use it. Although, no, there's no easy way to... I had to think that through because that doesn't help. So, okay. Back on subject. But just for the, you know, for the male-identified folk out there that don't really think about themselves as being vulnerable to sexual assault and other forms of physical sexual victimization, please just, you know, disabuse yourself of that fantasy. It's real. I believe two episodes, I did one called Yes, Men Can Be Raped, and that one again talked about child molestation, but also just men being victimized throughout their lifetime. With sex crimes, and it's always interesting because I often wonder if it is, I think despite this label of hypersexuality being attached to us as gay and same gender loving men, I don't think that a sexual assault is ever going to be purely sexually motivated, because there are people that we're attracted to that we may actually approach for sex and they say no. And we might not like it, but we go about our business. We don't all go about raping folks and forcing them to do things. So I think when it does venture into this idea of having sex with someone without consent or violating the terms of engagement, whether it be condom use, whether it be... you know, specific sexual acts that they're consenting to versus ones that they've said, I'm not doing that. All those things, violating those things, it's all sexual assault and or rape. So I want to get back to this 2018 study. In that sample, they also had a sample of men. Now, 43% of the men in that sample, so you're talking about 430 men loosely, assuming an equal distribution of men and women, 430 of those men reported experiencing some form of sexual harassment and or assault in their lifetime. Now, amongst those men, 34% of them said it was verbal. So again, we have potentially sexualized comments, homophobic comments, transphobic comments, slurs being hurled at these men. 17% of them were touched or groped. So 170 randomly selected men in the U.S. reported being touched or groped. Now, they didn't say, they didn't break it down by whether they were touched or groped by a woman or a male. They didn't make that breakdown, at least not in the material that I had access to. Last but not least, 7% of the men reported surviving a sexual assault. Now, those numbers, certainly not as high as what our sisters are experiencing out there, or for those that are, I can't think of the right term, I don't know if it's femme appearing, I'm not sure. So I would just say our sisters as an umbrella, and for anyone who doesn't identify specifically in the binary, gender fluid, gender nonconforming, I apologize. It's not my intention to exclude you. My brain is just not finding the proper words today. But basically, folks who identified themselves as women are at pretty high risk, whether it be verbal or physical assault. Now, there was a study done by a graduate student. His name was Patrick Ryan McNeil, and he worked on his master's thesis in 2012. And I always love a good student project because this is where you get into the nitty-gritty. I remember doing my dissertation and my thesis, and it was all very, very specific. And that's the part that's really cool about being a graduate student and having to do these projects. He surveyed 331 gay and bisexual men around the world. Okay, so it's a global sample. Again, I wasn't able to get a full text of his thesis, so I can't say what his sample methodology was. However, I'm willing to guess that it was what it needed to be because it got past this committee. You don't get to just do whatever you want. There are about 3-4 people looking at you like, what's this? And you better have a good answer. Okay. So in his study, he found that 90% of the men said that they are either sometimes, often, or always harassed or made to feel unwelcome in public spaces because of their perceived sexual orientation. So this isn't just about some guy that might be interested in you and he's deciding to go all toxic with his expression of his masculinity. This is also just the general public harassing our gay, bi, same gender loving men out there. Now, I suspect that a lot of us have experienced this to varying degrees. I have. When I was younger, it was very traumatizing. And I'm still working through my black man issues, from those years, just in terms of relating to black men and feeling safe in doing so. I suspect that it has stuck with a lot of folks out there beyond myself. So one of the things that they found when they looked at educating bystanders about this, and they did a project with some boys, and they did ask them, hey, a male role model, who are you basing that on? Who's your role model? If you don't have a specific person and you want to create an idealized person, what are you doing? Who is that? And I believe nearly 60% of the boys picked a relative as a model. And I think 43% of the boys in the study picked their fathers. So these are their heroes. If you are one of those dads who thinks it's okay to comment on a woman's appearance unsolicited, you have a wife at home, and your child is with you, and you feel like you need to do that, we talking to you. He's watching, and he's going to act just like you're acting now. This shit gets, you can stop this stuff early on in life. I know it will never die completely, but we can cut a lot of this shit out early in the game. Okay. So, I mentioned earlier bystanders being able to intervene when they suspect that someone may be being harassed or possibly, about to be sexually assaulted. The image of the inebriated person being led out of a bar by some random stranger comes to mind. There are ways for you to intervene to possibly prevent or break up what's happening. One of the most common strategies that tends to be pretty non-lethal for you, because we don't want people to go out there, you know, getting shot, stabbed, beat up, and the like, trying to prevent these types of things. First thing you can do is create a distraction, okay, or interrupt what's happening. It's really quite effective and quite easy. Even if there's a, there was a video, I love the video of the guy on the subway train. There was this man harassing this young woman on a train. The guy that intervened never said a word. All he did was walked in between the man and the young lady and rested up against the pole. He had his headphones on. He kind of like, you know, I think initially had his back to the guy, and then he started turning to the guy because the harasser would kind of circle around him to get to the young lady. And finally, he just started standing in front of him face to face. And I just said, ooh, wow. It was extremely effective because it diverted all the attention from the young lady to, or at least disrupted his plan of just having free access to her. He had to work for it at that point. Which again, all that movement brought the attention and eyes of other people. Another one is to initiate a non-confrontational action, as they call it. The most common of this is the fake friend. So if you see someone being harassed, you basically can make your presence known by calling out to that person. I've done this before with a former student who was being bothered by this young man walking across campus. Kind of, you know, he looked a little creepy with it, and as I got closer, I could see the distress on her face, and so I walked up to her and said, "Hello, miss." So I can't recall her last name. I was like, "Walk with me here. We need to chat real quick." And she was like, "Oh, thank you, doctor." You know, and she was whisked away. And this young man kind of recognized, like, "Oh, that's a faculty member. I probably shouldn't fuck with him." And luckily, he didn't. You know, and the thing that you do is, in those cases, you ignore the harasser. So it could just be a thing of, like, if you see, how did I do that? I saw there was a young man who was being kind of led out of a bar by this guy who clearly did not come with him. I remember seeing the young man at the bar. I remember seeing the older guy come in a good hour later. And the young man was drunk off his ass, which is his right. You know, it doesn't mean it's an invitation to victimize him. But this older man was trying to, you know, whisk him away. And I kind of lost track of them. And then I saw that they were both gone. So I went outside and I kind of ran after. The guy was like, "Hey," you know, I think I was calling him Jeff or some random name. And I said, "Hey," I was like, "Buddy, I think you forgot, you know, your hat in there, blah, 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 your jacket. You know, come on back and get it, because I'm not sure which one is yours. The woman is, you know, at the hat check, or the guy's at the hat check, just kind of like freaking out." And I was able to kind of be like, "Oh, excuse me, are you guys together?" He's like, "Oh, no, I was just helping him, you know, to the train." I said, "Oh, okay, well, I'm happy to walk him if you want to go, because he has to go back in and get this thing, and plus another friend of his is like, he left in the middle of blah, 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 you know, and it worked out fine. I don't know, you know, again, a lot of times your presence is all that's needed. What happens a lot with these types of cases is people are assaulted in plain daylight in the middle of a whole lot of folks. Whether it's comments, whether it's someone walking by and you know, violating your personal space and touching your body, these things often happen with people around. And one of the things that happens when you're in a crowd and something like that happens, everybody's waiting on someone else to do something, if they even notice that it's going on. It's always like, I know for me, when we have a family function, you know, there is the function. But then there's all the subtext, and some of it, you'd be like, oh, you didn't see so-and-so looking at this like that? And you missed all that. But the other folks, some other folks in the room caught it, and you caught some stuff they didn't catch. Unless something comes to the level that it requires your attention, where you really recognize, like, oh, I need to, that's a problem, I need to get in that, you're probably going to miss it. So a big thing is certainly calling attention to any problematic behavior. If you're in a group of folks and you see a man harassing a woman or touching her in some way that's unwanted, you can say, stop touching her. You can just say it out loud. He doesn't have to know it's you. Use the crowd to your advantage, like he's using it to his. Leave her alone. Why are you stalking her? There are all these sorts of things you can say that you could possibly retain your anonymity in saying it. Now, there are a ton of other things that you could do, and I'll probably put that material in the show notes, because I see I'm coming up on 45, 46 minutes, and I want to try to get out in an hour and 15, if not less. We'll see if I keep it succinct with these letters. But I will put in the show notes links to some other materials if you're interested in learning some basic bystander intervention strategies. But certainly, my goal in sharing this material with you is that you may be able to intervene safely and effectively. I don't want anyone jumping into something where they end up getting injured, if not killed. That's not what we're trying to do. But we are trying to create a safer world for our fellow humans, as well as the animals, because they catch hell too. So I am going to move from our main topic of the day, and I'm going to get into these letters from our listeners. So up first, I don't have a name here, so I'm going to name this person Patronus. I'm feeling a little Harry Potter with it tonight. So Patronus writes, I have a big problem, and Patronus, your grammar, baby. I have a big problem, and I'm feeling like shit. I find myself increasingly attracted to my son's ex-boyfriend. Well, see, this is already some shit. But okay, I'm going to read the letter. They broke up about 2 years ago, but I usually come across paths with him a couple times a week. Their breakup was amicable, and he's a good guy. I feel like it would be wrong to date my son's ex, and there's a 30-year age gap between us. Still, I am really drawn to this young man, and part of me wants to see where it would go. But he is my son's ex. What should I do? Okay, so keeping this concise, baby, let me just say this. First of all, there are plenty of young men out there, if you must have you a young tenderoni that could be your child's age, try to find one that was not dating your son. I'm just saying. That's some raggedy shit. Truly, truly raggedy. You say it multiple times, but he is my son's ex. My son's ex-boyfriend. He may be a good guy, but are you sure he's into you? Are you sure he wants to date his ex's daddy? Like, child, please. Ooh, okay. I'm not going to get my pressure up reading you. I'm really not. I'm just going to say that you may in fact be drawn, and perhaps your love and all that is legitimate, and maybe this is the man of your dreams, but you can guess what? You're going to have to find another one, because you're going to force your son to potentially choose between him and you. Or better yet, between himself and anything he might be feeling about his dad dating his ex and your happiness. Don't put your son in that situation. That's just, it's foul. I'm going to go with the don't do it when you say, what should I do? What you should do is, if you need to, take you a cold shower, go thumb through some baseball cards until the urge passes. You may want to, if you cannot avoid coming into contact with this young man, keep it at high and by. Just don't be the creepy older guy. And it's not to say that because you're 30 years older than him, it's not going to work. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying is he was fucking your son, so he don't need to be fucking you. Just really, no. No, 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 no. Okay, moving on from Patronus. I think that was Patronus. Okay, so I have another one here. This one is, okay, nameless again. Okay, we're going to call you Pootie Tang. Okay, so Pootie. Pootie writes, I am a cisgender man who identifies as same gender loving. Okay. I am dating a trans man and he's easily the sexiest man on the planet to me. All right now. I even switched from being a bottom guy to a verse top so our sex could be more fulfilling to him. That's well done. I could see myself marrying this guy. It strikes me as a 2-for-1. Okay. Get the guy and the possibility of kids in one guy. Is it wrong to think of him this way? Am I fetishizing him? No, I don't think you're fetishizing him. I think if you were talking about how masculine and macho he is, yet, you know, his pussy is so this and that, then I could make a case for it. And I'm not a trans man, so I don't know what that objectification looks like, truth be told. I don't know. I need to ask somebody. I know a couple of folk. I need to ask some folk about that. I know just the one. And a future guest, too. I'm a guest. He has agreed to come on the show. I just had to get him a date. So, I think that certainly you don't want to call him a 2-for-1. He may recognize he's a 2-for-1, but I think if you want kids, that's a conversation you need to be having before you marry. You may find that he does not want children, or perhaps he may want children. He may want to carry said children. But understand, if he does, he's going to have to go off the testosterone for a while to carry the baby. And just to imagine, yeah, I suspect probably, I don't know if trans men ovulate, but obviously if they do or they don't, there are going to have to be some changes that are going to have to happen biologically and hormonally for your man. So these are things that you definitely need to talk to him about. I commend you on your switch in roles. You said verse top, so I'm guessing he straps on and puts it on you from time to time, and I respect that. I love it. Because, you know, I just remember this comic book that, I forget, The Orientation Police, where the guy, you know, he was a gay man dating a trans man, and cute little trans, little cub, too. He was cute. And it was interesting. He's like, you know, you want some dick tonight is what he said to him. And he's like, yeah, he's like, okay, go pick the one off the shelf there so we can get this going. You know, I just thought that was fabulous. I don't want to be like, yay for you that you're not transphobic. But I'm going to give a yay for you for hopefully seeing this guy for the person that he is. And he sounds like a really great person. And you are in love, and he is the sexiest man on the planet to you. So, for folks saying that, you know, a man has to have a penis to be sexy, no, he doesn't. He don't need a penis. Sexy is what sexy does. Sexy is seen, baby. It's just seen. It's picked up. So yeah, don't call him a 2-for-1. You may want to have a conversation to figure out the language around this and his interests, and you don't say whether he wants to have children or anything, or if he'd be okay with being called a package deal, so to speak. I don't know. It's not to say that because he's a trans man that he's like, I don't want children. I'll never carry them. There are trans men that have carried children to term. And I don't know about afterward with breastfeeding. I couldn't tell you. I would think that would be kind of out, but I need to get a trans man on to ask some questions. Get a nice panel of trans men. Those are just interesting questions, and it's not so much this morbid thing of what's between your legs as much as like, okay, so your gender has been shifted in another direction. How does your body respond to that? I am intrigued. For some reason, I can't remember where breast milk is produced, per se. I think it is produced in the mammary glands, but are those removed when you have top surgery? I don't know. I have no idea. I need to ask those questions. So I suspect that I can't be the only person that has that question. And just the idea of trans men having children. I'm sure there are articles out there. There are studies, not studies, but just case studies and stories that have been told. But it'll be interesting to get a perspective from someone who is living as a trans man, and who is all man in their mind, yet has the opportunity to potentially bring a life into the world. So that would be an interesting conversation. I'm going to work on getting that together. And I know just the person. Okay. So, that concludes today's episode. I can't believe I got it done in under an hour. I'm shocked. And I actually did a full show, I believe. Yeah, I didn't leave anything out. I didn't do the Twitter craze today because I just, you know, it's crazy. I just didn't have it to give. Although I will say that folks need to beware of snitting, which is sneezing and shitting at the same time. Eat your fiber, baby. You get a little more firmness that way. That way, if it is a snit trying to come through, the sphincter should be able to block it. I'm just saying. If it has a little more bulk to it. But that's a little morbid. So, okay. So, thank you again for joining me. I am Dr. Pookie. I really encourage you to subscribe to the show. There may be a change in the show feed once, because I am moving to a different podcasting host by the end of the month. Definitely want to come into the new year with a new host. Cheaper, more features. I am looking forward to that because I do have some ideas for some series and possibly a second show. And it needs to be its own separate feed. I can do that with this new provider. Can't do that with the old one without paying twice the money. So I encourage you to subscribe. Share the episode with a friend. You know, if you can repost on your Twitter feed, the announcements for the show will be showing up on the show's Twitter feed, which is Podsexual. Certainly love ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and all the other podcasting platforms. Yeah, just give me a rating. Love 5 stars. Comments, reviews would be nice. If you want to reach out to me, you can either do that via email at sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. Once again, that's sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. Or you can reach out on the gram at sexualhealingpod. And you can reach me directly on Twitter at Dr. Pookie. And that's DocTorPookie. Once again, Dr. Pookie with the fabulous Bugetto spelling. And that's about it. So I am signing off as a proud member of the Pods by QPOC family. If you're looking for some entertainment and podcast material put out by queer people of color, check out the hashtag PodsByQPOC, or you can go to PodsByQPOC.com. Once again, a hearty thank you to our brother Trilificent for this valuable service he's providing to us all. So, once again, this is Dr. Pookie signing off. And remember, if you are a ball-headed hoochie, be proud, shake them cakes, but only allow cream that you want. That's it, y'all. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.